Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie Loftus.
My name's Caitlin Durante.
Oh, I'm still getting used to the last name thing.
We started out early episodes, we were saying our last names, then we dropped them.
Then we got really casual. And yeah. Then I was about to say, I haven't done this in like, I think 4 or 5 episodes now. I do have a Mike's Hard Lemonade with me today.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I do think this was a cute bit when we were recording most of the episodes at night. However, it's 3 p.m. and it's buying a Mike's Hard Lemonade at 3 p.m. is a bad look. People get worried.
Yeah.
I panicked and I also grabbed oatmeal raisin cookies to be like, no, but I also care about my health.
Sure. Yeah. Balanced lunch, Jamie. Great job.
Yeah. To address the Mike's Hard Lemonade ongoing storyline on the Bechdel cast, they have followed us on Twitter. Have we DM'd them yet?
We have not.
God.
I know. I guess we should do that.
Mike's Hard Lemonade. That's a full name, right?
Yeah.
Mike H. Lemonade. Okay. So that's the state of affairs.
I think our guest is horrified with your choices.
I'm just waiting to say something about your choices until you want me to. So I'm literally sitting in my chair going, the only other time I've ever seen anyone drink Mike's Hard Lemonade is on Dateline Predator. It's literally the drink of Predator's choice. Every time. I used to be obsessed with that show. And it would be like, the fake adult would be like, I'll be down in a minute. And then the creepy Predator would be like, I stopped and got some Mike's Hard Lemonade. And so I kind of feel like the crew of Dateline Predator love Mike's Hard Lemonade. So the way that they got it for free was to tell the person posing as the person who was going to be predated, that's not a word, who was going to be datelined, to tell that guy that she liked Mike's Hard Lemonade. He gets hauled off to jail. They're like, here's our Mike's Hard Lemonade. Woo! We are nailing it.
That's super sneaky. I mean, maybe there's some sort of people who love Dateline, people who love Mike's Hard, because I love Dateline NBC.
I know.
I've been known to crack a Mike's Hard and enjoy an episode.
The correlation is obvious.
Yes. I'm a Lester head.
It's Mike's and it's hard.
Give me the Lester.
And it's a lemonade.
And it's lemonade.
I know. So it's got all of the ingredients of a Dateline Predator episode. A dude, something that's hard, and a non-alcoholic beverage for your underage teen. But then the hard makes it, I don't know. You know what? I just ruined your sponsorship.
Mike H., don't listen to the haters. Don't listen to the haters. That would be, I think it would be a wild, I mean, if Mike's Hard Lemonade wants to clean up their image a little bit, sponsor a feminist podcast, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, to be clear, 100%.
We do not have an actual sponsorship.
No, we've just been harassing them for a year.
Also, Predator's probably like, you know, chocolate and soft pillows, too. So it's not like, I'm not trying to like deem this the beverage of Roy Moore. But it is.
Roy Moore's choice is a Mike's Hard Lemonade in a goblet.
All right. Wait, anyway.
And what's the podcast about?
So we are the Bechdel Cast. We talk about the portrayal of women in movies.
Sure.
We use the Bechdel test created by cartoonist Alison Bechdel as sort of a yardstick, a jumping off point.
Mm.
The Bechdel test requires that two women in a movie have names. They talk to each other and their conversation has to be about anything besides a man.
Do you want to do a demo?
I'd love to.
Oh, I was going to bring up Mike's heart. I can't.
How about that oatmeal cookie?
The oatmeal cookie is bad. We just passed.
That was, yeah, perfect. Well, you've already heard her voice, but let us actually give a formal introduction to our wonderful guest today. She is the co-creator of The Daily Show. Ever heard of it?
NBD.
And she is the founder of Lady Parts Justice, Liz Winston.
Hi. You'd think I was also the producer of Dateline Predator.
It was a great roundabout plug.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Yay. So you brought us the movie The Post.
I did.
Tell us why you chose this movie.
Well, I, as you would maybe guess from my CV that you just said, I'm a big political junkie and a media junkie. And when I heard there was going to be a movie about Katharine Graham's sort of taking over the Post from her husband in an era where, you know, women weren't running media anythings, mm-hmm. and women weren't really even working in the media that much. And it was just 20 or 25 years that women even covered Washington. You know, it was Eleanor Roosevelt who said, when I do press conferences, I will only talk to women, which forced every single newspaper to have to hire women reporters because they didn't have any. It was genius.
That's
awesome.
So
I didn't know
you
that.
Figure, yeah, that was in like, you know, the late 30s. So that means that this was in 1972, I think. And so, you know, 40 years of just having this woman take over the paper. It was owned by her family. They gave it to her husband, not her.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then her husband does it. So, and I just love news and media and all that stuff. And I really love Watergate and the Nixon administration and all that. So it was exciting for me to have a story that told of how the Pentagon Papers came to be and the injunction with the Times and how the Washington Post kind of had a comeback. So that's why I picked it, because I thought it was going to be really great. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find it really great.
I was so ready to enjoy this movie.
Right.
It was because it has, and this will be, I think this is like my main thing with it, is like it has all the ingredients for a great movie, but it's not. It's extremely mediocre. It was really frustrating because it's like they have this, it's an amazing story. They've got the actor, you would think, but.
The all-star cast, you've got Steven Spielberg
at
the
helm. Stars are out for this one.
Yeah, I just saw it about 2 hours ago. So, Jamie, you had already seen it, and I only saw it today. So it's like we're switching roles.
I was ready. I mean, I love, or I have loved, like journalism movies. I think that they can be great, very exciting, but this one wasn't.
No, and it's, I was reading that they wanted to get it out this year because of the parallels of journalism and controversy and government overreach and all of that. And it was so thrown out. And I'm a historian. And so I knew who all the players were.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine, and I don't know if you guys are like news nerds or anything, but like they didn't really tell me enough about who Daniel Ellsberg was as a backstory,
right.
What the Rand Corporation is as a backstory. Mm-hmm. The first time you meet Ben Bradley, you don't even know, you know the guy named Ben. You don't know like that he is, you know, running the Washington Post. So it was all, and even Robert McNamara, they kept calling him Mr. Secretary in this opening scene that introduces his role as the Department of Defense secretary who crafted this incredible dossier that we now know as the Pentagon Papers that showed that we knew we were losing the war and we sent men anyway and that our government covered it up. But like you don't learn that he's McNamara till in. So it's to me, I felt like you need to give people a context. You know, when All the President's Men was made, it was made just under 2 years after Watergate happened. So everybody had the information and they knew. This is 45 years later. Cut us a break on the story. And then when I saw David Cross is in it and Bob Odenkirk, the first time I watched it, I thought that they were Woodward and Bernstein.
Oh.
And they're not.
Oh. No.
No, they're absolutely not.
They're not. They're not. You know, I was like, I thought they were going to be Woodward and Bernstein.
That would have been more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that
Why wouldn't
more
you
sense.
Have David Cross and Bob Odenkirk not play Woodward and Bernstein? I was like, that's a failing on everybody's part. Yeah.
This was tricky. It was like, because I am like aware of everything that happened and know all the main
you know, players, but it was confusing with the way the movie treats a lot of the characters. Like, it does assume that you're going to make a lot of connections that there's no reason that you would, unless
right.
you knew everything. Where, yeah, like the secretary connection took me, I think, until almost halfway in the movie, be like, oh, that's who they're talking. That makes way more sense. Where it's like sometimes they're using like Mr. So-and-so, sometimes they're using their title, sometimes they're just using their first name, and there's never any connection. And I'm not surprised to hear that there was like a timeliness thing to it, because that felt like a little like we're being kind of hit over the fucking head with it too, where there were like two scenes I wrote down. I'm like, Tom Hanks may as well break the fourth wall and look to camera and like wink of like, hear that, Mr. Prezi? Like, it's just like it was a little, I'm like, it
and
was
his
a bit
forgetting
much.
His accent a lot.
Yes.
He kept being like, I'm sorry, who are you right now?
What accent was he meant to be doing?
I don't know.
It sounded Boston it sometimes, and other times I'm just like, what is happening?
Also, the protest scenes were so cheeseball-y.
So
dumb. It looked like yeah. they gave every extra a Sharpie and said, write something that sounds like it was back then. I mean, there was so many fringe vests and so many dudes with like long hair singing. Like, everybody played the guitar. It was like there was four people in a pod playing guitar and singing a peace song, and other people had like Molotov cocktails. It was like, is everything that happening at once? It was so dumb.
There yeah. was a lot of like uncanny valley qualities to this movie of just like, what is it? Like, this era had been described to the set dresser, yeah, but not like she hadn't actually heard
it. And Meryl Streep just kept sleeping in her own paper. Like, she'd have a notebook, and she every scene of her was like waking her up from narcolepsy moments that she was right. having. And I keep calling her Meryl Streep, Catherine Graham, the Catherine yeah. Graham character.
We usually end I know up just calling as, people yeah. by their actor.
I know her as Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Listeners of the Pulp Fiction episode might recall that, mm-hmm. according to me, her name is Meryl Streep. Anyway,
amazing call.
The other part that I thought was so lame is whenever they would cut to the Nixon lookalike on the
oh my
phone.
God.
Like, ugh. You see him through like a window of the White House, and he's like talking on the phone. He's like making these insane hand gestures.
Not a particularly good impression.
No, and just like not shot well. Like, I was just like, what is this? Ugh, I don't know. So I've taken history classes. I've learned about the Vietnam War. I read a whole book about it, and somehow I don't remember a single thing about it. I don't know almost anything about the historical events that were depicted in this movie. For some reason, American history, it goes in one ear and out the other. I just like cannot absorb it or remember it.
For our purposes, that's helpful because this movie must have been truly insane to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not really like, not knowing any of the major players of this story, not remembering or knowing much about it to begin with. I would say I was watching the movie for about 45 minutes until I even understood what was happening.
Well, it's true. And that's the part that for somebody who does understand it, all I kept doing was getting more frustrated that they weren't filling other people in on what was happening. And for me, like, I'm old as fuck. So when Watergate was happening, I was around 11 or 12 or I don't know. I was like, yeah. But I got like preteen chicken pox one summer. Mm. So I couldn't go out. Mm. And I watched the Watergate hearings every day.
Wow.
Like, I was this
God.
Crazy loony kid who watched the Watergate hearings every day. And I was sort of fascinated by it. So I loved it. And I was kind of like, I don't know, what a nerd. So
That's life-changing chicken pox.
It was life-changing chicken amazing. Pox, you know? And so I was like this 11-year-old kid talking about Sam Irvin and John Dean. And like, I kind of knew what was happening. And then I would ask my dad to kind of fill me in. And then I realized my dad was like a total right-wing kook. And so that was problematic. And so I had a whole bunch of older siblings who were like protesting the war. And so our dinner was always like a shit show of screaming at each other. So I wanted to see this part of, because we always heard about the New York Times and then we saw all the President's Men. And I just wanted to hear this like take on what happens when a woman takes over a paper. And all I did was see somebody going, have you talked to Bob? What does Bob say? Yeah. Is Bob waiting? Bob, are you on the phone? Is Bob here? Where are my glasses? How's this going to, I don't know. And it was like, what the hell?
Meryl is Meryling out in this movie too.
Yeah. I'm just She's like Feral Street. She is like, honey. What is happening?
She's like, she's doing it like I was Because I went back and watched interviews with Katharine Graham and was like, why did she make these choices that she made? It didn't make, like, she was doing sort of her Julia Child voice. But, like, if Julia Child was very tired, that's what her Katharine Graham sounds like.
I just kept asking for her glass. I'm trying to make but I can't find my glasses.
There's a few different times where she went, Ben.
And then Bob Odenkirk's character's name was also Ben. So that was also problematic.
So many Bens.
I would argue that in a cast, a pretty amazing cast, almost no one does a good job. Like it's kind of amazing how bad everybody does. Steven Spielberg, I would say, did a pretty horrendous bang-up job. Tonally, it just really bothered me of, like, even in the first scene where it's like, okay, we start with the flashback and then we go to the story being put together, and it's all like swelling music, crossfading in of headlines, spoken exposition. It's like, there has to be a more, could this scene be faster? Why is this scene slow? It's the most important part. It was driving me
crazy.
Can I
do a reenactment? I'm gonna say a line and you guys are gonna repeat what the next line is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'm a little kid. You want some lemonade?
What are they, like, no?
How much is it?
No. Is there vodka in it?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, okay. I'm disappointed in the both of you. Taken by the, is there vodka in it?
I have a question.
That was
about
one of the female lines. Does that count? That count as when a child selling lemonade says, yay, lemonade, is there vodka? Well, it is to a woman talking about
do we find out what the kid's name is? I think we do, right?
No.
I feel like there's a lot of female characters in this movie whose names we do not know. Also, speaking of,
I was confused
lemonade,
about that too.
You are drinking lemonade with basically vodka in it.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what's in this can? Could be anything.
Opioids.
Taking years off my life. Yeah. But not sure what is in it exactly. Couldn't tell you.
No.
In the theater, I saw this movie for the first time last week. Mm-hmm. And so we've all seen it in theaters, right?
Yes.
Okay. In my theater, every time the Nixon impersonator was on screen, and the movie closes with him too, there was audible laughing.
Yeah.
And there was like, what the fuck is this? Like,
yeah.
There, when it closed on him being like, I forget where, like the closing line, but he was just like, hopefully nothing else bad will happen. And then his little cheek noise, like whatever, his jowls are clattering together like cymbals. And everyone was like cackling. And then it was like, oh, the movie's over? What? Mm. Oh, okay, great.
They could have literally cast a Great Dane just to play Nixon. I mean, that's how bad it was.
So, and it was shot so lame. It was just like,
ridiculous.
And then, oh, another part where there was audible laughter in the theater was when they cut to the picture of Tom Hanks and his wife and the Kennedys, and it was a really bad Photoshop. Of that framed photo. Everyone was like, what the fuck is this? This is so stupid.
Oh boy. Yeah,
bang up.
Also, it was, for me, I guess, you know, this is like a marginal detail that drove me insane, but Ben Bradley was married 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And this was his second wife. Amazing waste of Sarah Paulson.
Yes.
In a role. And so it was like his last wife, Sally Quinn, also wrote for the Washington Post. And so if you didn't know the history, but you maybe knew about her, because the cool thing about Sally Quinn and Ben Bradley is that they bought the Gray Gardens house from Crazy Little Edie
from
and Big Edie. From the Beals. And they redid the whole thing. Oh, I'm a treasure trove of useless bullshit. Like, for real. You're sad I don't
live
here.
That's a little bit of gristle. That's good.
I know. Yeah. You're welcome.
Whoa. Thank you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Whoa. Yeah. So I was like, that's not Sally Quinn. That's got to be, her name was like Antoinette Pichot, I think. I literally think her name is Antoinette Pichot.
She was like, and he called her sculptor.
Teen. You know, that's like going, like, some doing some deep cuts. Yeah. Oh, so I guess we're going to do the research and find out her nickname was Teen.
And then she's really only in, I mean, she appears in it several times, but usually she's serving food. She's, you know, facilitating, whatever. And then she's in that one near the climax of the movie where she...
Do you want some sandwiches?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the do you want some sandwiches scene, which is all of her scenes. And then the scene where she explains to Tom Hanks, actually, being a woman hard sometimes. And he goes, oh, never
never thought about it.
Yeah. Also, her sister was having an affair with JFK. And so Ben Bradley used to be really good friends with James Jesus Angleton, who was the head of the CIA then. And they did a whole giant investigation because the CIA was trying to do all of this crazy, much more interesting story is this crazy covert operation where the CIA was trying to manipulate and control what the media was reporting. So they were really good friends. And then when it was revealed that his sister-in-law was having an affair with JFK, they had like a big breakup around all of it. Like there's a lot of palace intrigue around the CIA and Ben Bradley and the Kennedy administration.
So many interesting things that would have made the movie more fun to watch.
I know.
Were they acknowledged?
Ben Bradley's wives would have been a better movie. Just cover those three wives, and they met in Paris. It's like a whole thing. Like there's some good shit, but we got the garbage heap.
Tom Hanks. I mean, and maybe there are exceptions to this rule that I'm not thinking of, but Tom Hanks has like pretty exceptionally bad taste in like period movies.
Yeah.
I think because he's in one of my least favorite movies of all time, Charlie Wilson's War, a movie that is 10 years old and yet is like, how did this movie come out? And people were like, it's so cute how this like political official is harassing women for 3 hours. It was, oh God.
But wait, can I just talk about one more thing about the movie? Okay. So when Bob Odenkirk's character, Ben. goes to meet, I'm losing my
mind.
Daniel Ellsberg.
Right.
And he goes to his hotel room, and there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of stacks of paper everywhere.
Yeah.
And then he compiles it into two file boxes and brings it on the plane. And I was like,
how did that happen? To deliver that trailer moment. I don't know, government secrets. Okay, trailer guy. Easy job for you.
Government secret, Ben.
We're all laughing.
And also there was so much weird bumbling for no reason. Like when Ben has to make a phone call
every time.
And he's like, he drops his notebook and the quarters are falling. And I was like, why is he bumbling? What does that have to do with Ed? Is that a choice?
I wrote that down because every time he's at a payphone, which is like three or four times, there's some sort of fit. They're like, let's let Odenkirk do some physical improv. Like, no, why? Yeah. That's not what this movie is. What are you?
It builds the tension of the scene. No.
One of my, in a movie full of my least favorite scenes. At some point, Jesse Plemons and Zach Woods show up and it's like, are they Woodward and Bernstein? No,
no,
they're not. But there's that scene at the end. And this is like another time where I don't know why, but in so many recent episodes, like the way music is used in movies has really been like bugging me. Mm. And it's just lazy in this where it's just like, yeah, let's just throw in some swelling strings and hopefully people won't notice, you know. But there's like that scene at the end where a woman in the office is getting a call and she's like, oh my gosh, it's so-and-so, and the ruling is in, and they say that journalism is good, and journalists are good, and then, like, the music is like, do-do-do-do-do-do, I was like, fuck this, how dumb do you think we are?
Exactly. Yeah. Not to mention, like, the way that all went down, I can't imagine that's how it goes down.
Right. A screamed line of exposition.
Yeah. Journalism wins.
Right. And it's like, just make eye contact with the camera. Like, that's, oh boy.
I know.
Should I even attempt a recap? I don't know if I'm going to.
Yeah, well, we can help fill in the gaps. This is a hard movie to recap.
It sure is. So it's 71, 72. We're in the middle of the Vietnam War. Nixon is president. Kay Graham, the publisher, I guess, of the
publisher of the Washington Post. Yes, Catherine.
Again, I don't even know what the first 45 minutes of the movie are. Like, it opens with this like scene in the Vietnam War where this journalist, he's like observing, he's checking things out, and then he reports back to Bob McNamara, and he's like, actually, things in the war aren't really good. And they're like, well, we can't tell anyone this. We have to lie. So it becomes this like huge study that becomes these top secret documents. And then Daniel Ellsberg is like, I should steal these and leak them. So the New York Times gets a hold of them first and leaks a little bit of it. But then the Supreme Court's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, they're setting up for a long leak.
Right.
Well, no, the Supreme Court didn't say you can't do that. What happened was there was an injunction because of the White House. Mm. So the White House tried to get this from not happening, saying that it was it would be a national security risk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to get
you're
all
doing
the details.
Great. You're killing it. You're nailing it.
And meanwhile, Katherine Graham and Ben, one of the Bens, they're like, wow, crap, like all this paper, we should take it public and no one takes us seriously. And they're all upset about that.
Right.
And then
people are like, there's like the implication of like, well, we can't have a woman running a paper. It's a liability.
Right. Exactly. Sort of yeah. No one really is confident in her abilities.
She's really good friends with the guy who wrote the Pentagon Papers.
Right.
Big oops.
That's a problem.
Oopsies.
And she fired Al Friendly. Like they had in such weird specific details. I'm like, who is this for?
Yeah.
Anyways.
So the Washington Post, via another of the Bens, the Bob Odenkirk Ben, gets a hold of this huge study, the Pentagon Papers, as they later become to be known.
Can't hold a phone, but he's a great journalist.
There's this whole sequence about, do we publish these? Like, it's our journalistic responsibility to let the American public know that the Vietnam War is actually not good and that the government knew that we couldn't win it from the very beginning, but we still keep sending soldiers over there to die in this war. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, but what will it do to our newspaper? It might, you know, it will collapse and all this stuff.
Yeah, because of the injunction. So they were trying to decide whether or not they would be shut down because of whether or not the Supreme Court would rule that it was illegal.
Liz, do you know, I did not check this, but was like the timeline of like, because the timing of this, part of the reason that Kay is like, I don't know if we should leak the papers is because there is some sort of like week-long thing when they were going public.
Yeah, so what happens is, the newspaper was a family-owned paper, and they were hemorrhaging money, and they were in debt. So what they were going to do is go public so people could buy shares and the newspaper could stay afloat.
Right.
There's a window of time when you go public and you have shareholders. There's a window of time where if you do something that is highly illegal or unethical, the deal can fall through. Mm. And the shareholders can back out of the deal. So that window of time was when they were deciding whether or not they were going to defy what could possibly be a Supreme Court ruling that said freedom of the press does not mean that you can take government acquired whistleblowing papers and expose them to the public. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court ruled that it is in the public's good to know that this is happening in their name.
But this was the timeline where this was happening during that window where the deal could have fallen
through.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yes. So after a lot of like Katherine Kay being like, should I publish or should we not publish this story? What do? She finally decides to go ahead and run the story, publish.
And then she says, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
She's sleeping for a lot of this movie.
That's right. She's slow, tired.
She's exhausted.
And so they're like, oh no, what's this going to do? Because there's another extra obstacle at the last minute where the lawyers were like, oh wait, your source was the same source as the New York Times. And that could really, like, you could go to prison for this. Like, the stakes were very high. Katherine's like, fuck it. Publish the damn paper. And they do. And everyone's like, oh my God. And then all the other papers follow suit. And they're like, wait, we saved the world.
And then there's a 45-minute sequence of Steven Spielberg filming newspaper presses.
Which I actually kind of liked. That was the most visually interesting part of the movie because the rest of it's just talking
heads. Just
watch
Citizen Kane then.
It's
way better and has like that in it
thanks.
Too. Like there's a million, I can give you a million papers where they spin around and it's a headline, like a million movies. That, have, like, that visual effect that is not insufferable time you'll never get back.
Yeah.
It's just like, can we reallocate the time spent looking at newspaper presses explaining what's happening in the fucking movie?
Especially
it's like,
newspapers that aren't yours. It's a movie about the Washington Post, and we just keep reading the New York Times. It was wild.
The majority of revelations come from the New York Times, which is weird because it's eventually the Washington Post does get a story, but that is not really focused on what that actually happened. I don't know. I don't know what is happening in this movie. is that everything though? I mean, I think, like,
and then finally the Supreme Court rules that
freedom of the press is freedom of the press.
Yeah, and then could we have seen
that? Could we have seen that instead of hearing someone scream it to the office on a phone?
Yeah, that would have probably been more appropriate. And then the movie ends with the like Watergate scandal robbery thing. Yeah. Happening.
That was the breaking.
And then we're all like, oh wow, Nixon is gonna not be the president anymore.
That's when I realized it wasn't Woodward and Bernstein because they hadn't been hired yet. It's like, oh, right. They're breaking into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, is what they did.
Yeah.
And all that craziness. So,
right.
Fun.
It was such a cheeseball ending to the movie. It, like, yeah, audible laughter.
You literally don't need to see it.
You don't. Yeah. Listen, I know we've been talking about it for a while now, but skip the post. You don't got to see it.
I know. Are we saying it too early in the podcast?
Stay with us, though.
Yeah. Keep listening.
Because we haven't even told you if it makes the grade.
Yeah.
Right.
It's true. I mean, let's get into the female characters discussion because, hoo boy.
I mean,
boy. So much. It's all just missed opportunity after missed opportunity.
Yes.
Right. I feel like until the third act, Katharine Graham is not very much an active character in the story. She's not really doing any. I mean, she's making decisions, but we don't actually see her doing much. Like, she's not. I mean, I guess, and that's like not necessarily her role as the publisher to be like in the middle of the excitement and like reporting on stuff. But.
Well, part of what bothered me from like very early in the movie is that I don't even know if like the way the movie portrays her and kind of a little bit the way Meryl Streep plays her, it's not super clear to me that she is extremely competent at her job.
Yeah.
Which in real life she was. And so it was like weird where they were just like, well, we don't know if she's able to do the job. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm sure she's able to do the job because she's always... just waking up and being like, I miss my husband.
Glasses. Yeah, where's my Adderall?
Right,
But I feel, too, it's like this was her family's business, right? Mm-hmm. So you were the newspaper of record through monumental things. You grew up in a newspaper family. Do you have passion about information? Do you have passion about freedom of the press, caring about what the public thinks? Or was your family just like... these rich publishing people who were hobnobbing around with LBJ and all the way that they sort of dropped that stuff about she and her husband. But forget about the husband. Her dad owned the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, do you care about this shit?
It's not clear. I feel like she is far more... like her motivation in regards to working for the paper, like her character always connects it back to like, I want to make my dead husband and father proud. Like it never really has to do with like journalistic integrity or breaking stories. And I haven't done a deep dive on Kay Graham and I don't know what her actual, you know, like interviews.
I think
would
she
say,
loved it. I mean, I think she loved like, the newspaper business. Mm, yeah.
This movie's weird because it made me like her. Like I had more. Like excitement and respect for her as like a historical character before I went into the movie than when I left, because the way the movie portrays it is weird. And there's that scene with her and her daughter towards the end of the movie where it's like, I feel like Kay, like the movie sells out the character entirely in like one of the last scenes where she's just like, you know, she's saying like it was very stressful and but she's only talking about, I want to make my dad proud. I want to make my husband proud. I want to da 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 da. And just going on and to the point where she's saying, oh, and when my father wanted to give the paper to my husband and not me, I thought that made total sense.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
And she also says something weird like, people always say that whenever they see a woman doing something, I forget what verb she used, but it was like, when a woman does this thing, it's like seeing a dog walk on its hind legs. It's bad and it's weird. And like,
dog shaming.
Yeah.
Don't shame a dog.
Well, and also it was like when they were going public, they were saying, oh, you know, maybe you could try to think about expanding and becoming more than just like a local paper in Washington. And she was like, I don't know. I kind of just want to reach for the top shelf. I'm not really reaching for the moon or the stars. I don't. Right. I just want to keep it going and pay people. And even the opening scene was just like she was all consumed with making sure that the paper was covering Richard Nixon's daughter's wedding.
Right, yeah.
Julie Nixon Eisenhower, yeah.
That was the hill she was ready to die on.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, die on that hill, girl.
Well, another early scene is when, I don't know the guy's name, but she was kind of being coached by this guy of what to say whenever they go into this like big board meeting about when they're discussing like what the stock prices are going to be.
I kept writing it down as like Meryl Streep's friend.
Yeah, I mean, he worked for the paper, but I don't know what his name is or what his role is.
Bradley
but,
Whitford?
Maybe.
No, Bradley Whitford, the actor, isn't he the guy who played the
old, is that
the
him?
Older guy?
Yeah.
Who,
yeah.
Maybe.
In every role he's in recently, I'm just like, wow, that was it. Because he's in Get Out, too. And I'm like,
he was in West Wing.
Yes, he was in West Wing.
West Wing. Mm,
yeah.
That was a West Wing guy, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. He was the West Wing guy.
So him, he's like coaching Katharine Graham on like what to say. And she seems flustered. And she's like, I feel like I don't know this stuff. And then you see a scene where like immediately following that, she's in the board meeting. She's the one woman out of like 20 other men. And they're all talking about, I thought the shares were going to be $27. And there's like an opportunity for her to reveal the knowledge that she was practicing with this guy. And she's going to say, well, you know, quality drives profitability. And then she totally chokes. And then her friend.
See, I actually kind of liked that scene if it were paid off on in any way later on, but it's not.
Like if she like gets a chance to redeem herself, maybe? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, because I feel like the way that that scene plays out, like we as an audience know, it's like, what a missed chance. And, you know, she is in this huge room full of men who don't want to listen to her. But then the movie kind of, I mean, like sputters out in terms of keeping that going, in terms of like developing her as someone who you want to see succeed. Like, I don't know.
Right.
I was hoping that would come. I was hoping we'd see her in a meeting later where she would, you know, have one of those movie moments of like, actually, I have something to say. But, you know, that never happens.
There was no swagger.
She does kind of redeem herself by the end when she's like, I know the stakes. I know I might go to jail over this. I know that the paper might totally fail, but I say publish anyway. And we're like, yeah, you made the right decision.
I'm going to bed.
Going to bed. But that character arc, we don't see the actual arc happen. Like, it's just, she like flubs up at the beginning, and then we don't, like you said, we don't really see her character grow and develop and build over the course of the story that leads to that point where she like suddenly has strong decision-making skills.
Right. She has a few moments that I'm like, you know, there was one scene she had with Tom Hanks, Ben, where they're sort of challenging each other on
nepotism.
Hey, yeah. And like the way that Tom Hanks' character treats Meryl Streep is, you know, a mix of respect and condescension. But I mean, there are scenes where they're challenging each other and it is like a lively discussion. We have no idea. If you don't know the exact particulars of the history, you have no idea what the fuck they're talking about.
Right. Mm.
But they are challenging each other. And so she has these few moments of like, she does know things. Mm-hmm. We just don't see her demonstrate knowing things in the way she does her job.
Right.
So,
well,
I don't know.
Also, there was a scene, and I'm sure that it was put out there for discussion, but it was just angering, where there's a dinner party and then somebody starts to talk about some kind of smart thing, and then woman says, well, that's time for us to move, and all the women and Katharine Graham go into one room and talk about outfits or some shit.
The men talk about politics.
Yeah,
that scene was fucking infuriating. And to keep our discussion about Titanic always going forever.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing.
Far more effectively done in Titanic 1997. But this is like sort of, you know, the women go to one room, the men stay in the room and smoke cigars and, you know, what's the line?
All brand new politics wouldn't interest you anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. The famous Billy Zane performance. Shout out Billy Zane, every day, always. But the way this scene,
he says that to Jack. He's like, you're too poor to know about cigars
and things.
Feminist icon Jack Dawson's like, I'm going with the ladies.
Yeah.
See you later. I just want to watch Titanic again.
I know.
But in the post, the way that rolls out, it challenges nothing. They're like, the women are not going to talk about anything but clothes. We don't know what any of their names are. And one literally goes like, Kay, that dreadful day job of yours.
I'm
like, are you fucking kidding me? They are, you know, according to the post, women are that dumb.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was just an endless, and it felt like they were wedging things in to remind people how sexist things were by like shit like that, where it's like, I get that. You can't show me in demonstrable ways any redemption at all. You know, even her decision to change the course of journalistic history was like, is Bob on the line? Bob, are you on the line? Bob, are you there? Are you on the line? Ben, are you on the line? Is everybody on the line? Who's on the line? Are the Russians on the line? I don't know who's on the line.
So many climactic scenes in this movie take place over the phone. It's very frustrating. I'm like, what's actually happening?
Also to the point of like all the women talking about like, oh, gowns and whatnot. There's a scene at the end after like, after the climax, and we're like, wow, we won. Journalism saves the day. And there's a group of people gathered around a woman's desk in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. And she says something like, no more articles about dresses or shoes. And but it's just like a throwaway line that like it's just like, oh, subtle. Great job. But there's also that scene where she goes and challenges Robert McNamara, and she's just like, how could you do this? Like, you knew all this stuff.
Bob.
You kept it secret.
Bob.
And
Bob.
Bob.
Bob, how could you do me dirty, Bob? My son, my nephew, Bob.
I think I might take back what I said about, like, not really seeing her arc, because you do see those times where she does go and, like, challenge people, and it seems like she's getting more confident in her abilities and decision-making and whatnot. And I also think it's cool that you do see kind of the stakes of the country and different parts of the globe kind of resting on her shoulders in terms of like, do we leak this information? Do we let the public know about this like very important thing that was happening at the time? I like that you get to see a woman in that position where she's making such a crucial decision.
Yeah.
Was it told interestingly?
I don't think it was in this movie? I felt like this movie was not interesting, which is crazy given the story it's telling. But I also feel like it just like does a huge injustice to the story and its characters. Like it just, if I knew nothing about the Pentagon Papers or any of that going into this movie, I'd be like, oh, so this was kind of a drag, kind of a boring thing that had, which is crazy because there's so much and they just do nothing. Like they're, one of my main things with this movie was like, I feel like this exact movie in every single way could have been made 15 years ago. Like it just feels like it could have come out at any time. Like there's no, especially because they're like, oh, it's a timely movie. It's a timely story. If you told me this movie came out in 2002, I would believe you because of how he treats its characters and how it treats the source material. It could have come out fucking whenever.
Well, and also like as somebody who created a TV show that wanted to shit all over the nepotism in the media, which is how The Daily Show came to be. Its driving force was observing the media and watching, you know, all these shows. The storylines for me of literally when Katharine Graham is challenged by Ben Bradley, the editor of the paper, and he says, wait, Robert McNamara has literally written this massive dossier that shows there's electioneer fraud. We've covered up the war. We send people to die knowing we were losing. And she goes, oh, do we have, he's been having kind of a bad time lately.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, so it's like, that is the point. You know, even the journalism that's supposed to be the best journalism we have in this country is so full of bullshit. And Tom Hanks sort of touches on it by like, everybody wants to go to the same parties with this one and that one. And those stories of like, of how those things intersect and how people finally do the right thing. Like, I think that's really important. And so it was like a shit bath up until she finally pulls the trigger. But like, how much do you have to be convinced when there's thousands and thousands and thousands of paper and thousands and thousands and thousands of dead people and
so
maimed
many lives
young
at
people?
Stake. Right. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, my friend, is, I don't know, he's got, you know, restless leg syndrome and he's just trying to make it work and I can't. Yeah.
His wife and him had a fight.
Yeah, you know.
They're having a hard time.
It's really tough. So, yeah, I mean, all of it was just sad.
By and large, yeah, I feel like Kay's character is underserviced and kind of largely just like unexamined as a person. It's just kind of all over the
place.
She
doesn't get that much screen. I mean, this is not an ensemble cast. I don't really know if we're supposed to identify any one character as the protagonist of the movie because it seems like it's her and Tom Hanks' character.
Sure.
But she doesn't get that much screen time.
Okay, if they were doing a movie called The Bechdel Cast and you were hardly in it.
Right.
That would be weird.
And they made one of us significantly dumber than we were in real life.
Yes.
That would be, yeah. It would be like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. It's called The Post.
Right.
And I don't know. I just kind of feel like, I mean, I know that like, There's not like 200 people that work on your podcast. So I know that's different.
How dare you that we know reveal our yet. Secrets?
Your strength Jeez, is so is clearly amazing that you don't need 200 people.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
That would be funny if there was a Bechdelcast movie and I was in it for 3 minutes and I was only drooling.
You're like, all you did was drink Mike's lemonade.
I'm just like, what are we doing? Where are we?
What's happening?
And my name was Bob.
Bob and a strike.
Yeah. So who else do we have for female characters? We have Judith. Who is the...
She was the person who was maybe going to report on the wedding, but then they were like, you're not allowed.
Right, but she said that Trisha Nixon looked like trash.
No, she said she looked like a vanilla ice cream cone.
A sick freaking delicious. Burn. Get that
sick
money.
Sick
a vanilla ice cream cone.
Oh my God.
You're fired. That's too sick a burn.
Yeah.
She's in it.
There's another woman who appears to be a journalist or a reporter of some kind. She's the one who at the end was on the phone and kind of like dictating what the Supreme Court ruling.
I wasn't sure she was a journalist or Tom Hanks' secretary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was unclear about her role.
Yeah.
There was the daughter.
The daughter who
did
do
she
we
have a name?
I don't know if we learned her name.
I was struggling with that. I was like, did I miss it? Because those were the scenes that I thought, I'm like, well, this. And it sucks because there's two extended scenes with Kay Graham and her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some exchanges that you're like, this could maybe pass the Bechdel test, but I'm not sure what her name is. I don't think
I mean, we
from what I could tell, you don't learn what it is.
We know her her maiden name is probably Miss Graham, but
no,
we don't know her first name.
I'm not cutting this movie any slack. Yeah, I don't think we learned her name.
No. And the little daughter's name, did we learn her name?
I don't think so.
No. Also,
although it would be hilarious if this movie passed the Bechdel test strictly on that lemonade stand interaction.
I think it might.
Lemonade vodka?
Yeah. Is it got vodka in it?
Catherine also has an assistant or secretary.
Oh, she's walking up the steps in that
but
scene.
But I don't know if we know her name either.
No, she was like, you have to be at this place at 5.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
so,
you
yeah,
so
there
much.
Was that scene. And then there was the scene with the daughter, but we don't know the daughter's name. And then was there an exchange between, who wants sandwiches?
And
there was one woman in that room.
Was that Judith or not Judith?
I think it was not. Oh, yeah, it was Judith.
Was it Judith?
There Maybe. Are 80 billion characters in this movie, so I couldn't tell
you the name of literally anyone if I didn't recognize them
Judith
by the actor.
Judith and Teen. Or Tin and Twinette. Twin, Tin. Yeah.
Actually, Tom Hanks, being lady, not easy. Oh.
My day was fine. Thanks for asking.
There is a scene. Feminist icon. Look out.
There's a scene where a woman, and I don't know who it is, says to Kay, I got a cake. Is that okay? And Kay says, as long as no one counts the candles, because it's her birthday.
Yeah. What's her name? Do we know?
I don't know.
Her name is?
She's walking towards the door to answer it when Ben Bradley is there to say, I'm at your party.
Oh, my God.
To tell you something.
Ben Bradley comes to her house at the beginning of 45 scenes of this movie. He's like, me again. And to the point where the movie even starts calling it out of like, wow, Ben, you keep showing up at my house. It's like, yeah, almost like there's a more interesting way to do this scene. Like,
I know. It's great. And I also just feel like we have to ask some old people. If you just went over to people's houses unannounced before the times of phones and things, did people just show up at your house all the time?
I remember when I was a kid, like my dad's friends would just pop over.
Maybe people just came over. But to your boss?
I feel like that's...
Maybe not.
I'm kind of glad that trend has died out. Whenever someone is like, hey, I'm just popping in. I was like, no, you have to leave my home. I'm not home. No matter of how many clear indicators that I'm home.
Yeah.
My grandfather would do that when we were little, and it would drive, maybe then it is like an old person thing, because it would drive my mom fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. She was just like, why is he, what? He's got a phone. Like, there's no need to just show up places.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Feminist icon. Your grandfather.
No, he's actually a pretty bad person.
Yeah, so we're all my grandparents. Okay, so as far as the movie passing the Bechdel test, I couldn't identify any scene where... There were quite a few scenes where women were interacting, but they were either talking about men or we did not know. It's usually Catherine Graham talking to someone else, but I don't think we know the other character's name in almost all of those scenes.
I'm with you.
If not all of them.
I don't think... I was the same way because I was like, super, because I did the same thing. I watched it 3 weeks ago and then I watched it again for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was really looking through the lens.
Right.
And I have notes of like, this happened at this. And I took a note of every scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I know that person's name? Like, do I have to go back and rewind it four times to see if maybe? And I was like, I don't know any of these people's names.
Yeah.
Right. This is, and something else that I noticed that really bugged me, especially on the second viewing, was how many times there are several women in the same room and their characters don't interact in any way at all.
Yeah.
And that, to me, says, like, I don't think that was done intentionally, but to me that's even worse of just like, oh, this filmmaker, it wouldn't even occur to them.
Yeah.
To have female characters interact. Like, it just, ugh. There's so many scenes where Meryl and her secretary are in the same room the whole time. They do not speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's
men speak to them, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's that scene when she walks in to talk to all the stockholders, and she walks up these steps, and all of these women are standing out there, and they open the door for her, and she walks in. And I was like, are they the secretaries of all the men in there? Like, who are all those women on the stairs?
And they all have these weird 40-yard stairs. Yeah. I'm like, what are they thinking?
What were they all standing there for?
They were, like, smiling at her. They're like, good job.
Yeah.
We're also ladies.
It's just, like, a very vague, overt, like, women, other women. But it's like, why would you know who she is? There's that scene, I forget why exactly she's in court at this point. But there's that scene where she's speaking to a young woman and the young woman's like, I hope you win. And then she sees that woman's boss mistreat her and be like, you're late, even though traffic or something. And that was another weird scene that I'm like, I think that Steven Spielberg thought he was being a feminist just then. Mm. But it was ultimately just a weird scene that and it never comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She worked for the judge. I think she was like worked for the judge, one of the judges.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Like,
that was the one who's like, she's like, my brother's still over there.
Yeah.
And I hope you win. But don't tell my boss I said that or even that I talked to you.
Ugh, I can't.
Well.
I'm really glad that I, because I came in here fucking hating this movie. And I was like,
okay,
oh my God, these women are like, I'm so happy. You guys were just like, oh my God.
I was almost worried that you picked it because you liked it.
No.
We were worried too. I was like, man, Liz is the smartest person in the world. How could she like this movie?
Oh no. I will never let you down.
Feminist icon.
No, I might let you down by telling you this right now. Can we hold hands when I tell you?
Yes.
I haven't seen Titanic.
Gasp. No, you're going to have an amazing night.
I'm going to watch it and then I'm just going to call you both and be like, I watched it. It's like, I'm really happy I did it.
It does so much better than you would ever in your life think it would do.
In terms
of the way it treats female characters.
However, it's not necessarily a great movie. Is it a
classy movie?
Another counterpoint.
I would say no.
It is the greatest movie of all time.
I know, and I don't know why I haven't seen it. I think it's one of those movies where, do you ever meet those people who, like, they didn't have sex in high school, and then they didn't have it in college, and then they're virgins and by accident, and they're like, now I just am keeping it as a point of pride, and maybe I'm just getting, you know? And I feel like that way about Titanic, where it's like, I just didn't see it, and then I was gonna, and then I haven't, and they're like, do I not see it? But I feel like I should just fuck Titanic.
Yeah, just have sex with Titanic.
Have sex with Titanic.
Yeah,
usually just fuck the Titanic.
Fuck the Titanic.
Yeah, right. I'm the same way with The Godfather. I've never seen it, and then I think it's like extremely cute when I tell people I haven't seen it, and then they go and unhinge their jaws. I'm like, that's right.
Yeah,
it's not on purpose, but it becomes on purpose after a while. Mm. Let's see how far into my life I can make it without seeing The Godfather.
Yeah, it's good. You should see it. It's kind of an amazing movie.
People, kind of I've heard good things.
Yeah,
heard good things.
Godfather 2 is largely considered to be a better movie than the first one.
I agree.
Similar with Paddington 2 and how it is the other best movie ever made, along with Titanic.
All right.
Paddington 2, love it. Anyway.
I'll see it.
I can't contribute.
Everyone's upset with me.
I'm like, I haven't seen even a Paddington 1. I think it's a bear. I'm assuming it's a bear.
It's a bear.
It's a bear with a raincoat?
He's got a duffel coat and a red hat.
Yeah.
I had to kill 2 hours yesterday, and so I saw about 70% of Jumanji.
Oh, I want to talk to you about that.
Oh.
I stayed until Nick Jonas showed up. I'm like, well, I guess I'm out. I guess I'm done. I guess I'm good, and I'm going to just go do what I have to do. But you know, not
Jumanji
as bad as you
a
think.
Genie?
No, it's like a board game.
A board game, right?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen the first one.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Jumanji 1990, whatever.
Yeah, file. I don't know a Jumanji. I know something.
I don't know. The new Jumanji, there's a lot of colors. It's kind of like a sensory overload.
Is it a cartoon?
No.
No, it's Jack Black, Kevin Hart.
The Rock.
The Rock. Nick Jonas.
Nick Jonas.
A woman from Doctor Who whose name escapes me. Karen
Gillian. I feel like you deserve better.
Thank you so much.
I feel like your time deserves better.
I just didn't have enough time to go home, so I'm like, I guess I'm going to just see part of Jumanji.
Did you pay money?
I use MoviePass.
Is that free?
So yeah. So it's like you can see one movie a day for like $10 a month.
So it's not free.
It's not free.
But if you go just to the like movies
freedom.
A lot.
It's true. MoviePass is much like freedom.
And you know what else is free?
And that
free?
It is not granted to everyone. You have to ask for it.
You know what else isn't free is the press for a little bit in this movie that we're talking about.
Thankfully, they saved journalism.
Wow. I love tying it back to the relevant topics.
You're a master of segues.
You are so good.
You are the segue.
Shall we rate the movie on our nipple scale?
Sure okay. Thing.
So, Liz, we have a scale of 0 to 5 nipples by which we rate the movie based on its portrayal of women. I'm going to have to say, it's not like... This isn't the worst one we've ever done, but it's certainly not the best. I'm gonna give it like maybe a 2.5 nipples.
Okay.
We've talked about how disserviced Katharine Graham was in the movie. I feel like we're not really ever on board with her, and that might be because she doesn't get a lot of screen time or opportunity for us to get to know her. I feel like the story could have just come from a different angle and told her version of it much better. Of the other female characters there are, we never even get to learn their names. We don't even know what their situation is. We see 80 billion men on screen at all times, and that's frustrating. I don't know. It could have done better. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Who are you giving your nipples to, though? The most important question.
But yeah, I'm going to give 2 of them to the lemonade. And the half nipple will go to Kay Graham.
I'm going to give it 2. And I would like to see what this movie would look like in the hands of a female director.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of missteps would not have been. But I mean, and I know that we're commenting on how women are treated by the movie and not the movie itself. But this movie is just like so lazily done in every single way. And I feel like just the way it treats its female characters is one of the very lazy components. John Williams composed the music for this and it's the worst. Like it's just no one is doing a good job. I think that they give us a female protagonist. And they're given the source material for a very interesting, nuanced character, and we just don't get it. Mm-hmm. Women be serving sandwiches. Women be providing exposition. Women be talking about shoes. It's just like, it's just all so fucking lazy and is a bummer on many levels because there is a good movie to be had about this subject matter, and this was not it. So I
there
it.
Is a movie called The Pentagon Papers, which have you seen
oh,
it?
Oh, is there? When
it
come out?
I haven't seen it years ago.
Oh, okay.
I should have done more research on it. Sorry, everyone. If you know about the movie The Pentagon Papers, please tweet at us.
Someone's favorite movie.
The movie was co-written by a woman, Liz Hanna, and Josh Singer. So you feel like it would have been a better movie, but just kidding.
Not this time.
No.
Not this time. But yeah, I'll give it 2 nipples. I'm going to give one of the nipples to Zach Woods because I like him a lot, but he didn't belong in this movie. And I'm going to give the other nipple to Sarah Paulson because she also deserved way better.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I would give it 2 grudgingly because really, what did you want me to walk out of this movie knowing and feeling? Like, I don't know the answers to those 2 questions. There's a biography about Katharine Graham that I would say we should all probably read. Because if Katharine Graham was a fraction of how she was portrayed in this movie and Ben Bradley saved that paper, then that's the movie. Mm. And why are you making that movie trying to act like she did something if he pushed her into everything? You know, I just feel like everything about this movie was sexist. If she was not awesome, then why did you make the movie?
Right,
you
right.
know, it's like, and if you wanted to make a movie that was about Ben Bradley and how awesome he was, and that Katharine Graham said, I inherited this newspaper. I didn't want to be in the newspaper business, but you're really smart, and I'm willing to put my family business on the line because you are willing to like fight for democracy. Mm. That's a movie.
Right.
But like, mm-hmm. I don't know what this movie was other than I felt insulted by Katharine Graham's ineptitude. I felt insulted by the fact that I thought I was going into a movie that was going to tell me a little bit about her journey in this historical context and didn't. Mm. And I just feel like every woman in it, I don't know who they were. Yeah. It was right. just...
So, sometimes you literally cannot tell them apart and you yeah. don't know their names
totally.
Ever.
Yeah. So I'm going to give my two nipples. I'm going to give, I guess, one to Judy for wanting to have some Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Hell yeah.
When it mattered.
Hell yeah.
And the other nipple I'm going to give to, I don't even know who deserves it. I guess,
yeah, probably
I guess Sarah Paulson for having to suffer through that bad Photoshop picture.
God, yeah. yeah. We all had to. We were right there with her.
Yeah. yeah.
I feel like Steven Spielberg or, you know, whomever tied to him, we're like, we want to make a journalism movie. Give me five ideas for a journalism movie. And he arbitrarily was like, oh, women are hot right now. Make the woman yeah. journalism movie. And it's just like, it's just so thrown together and wishy-washy. And the movie doesn't know what it thinks about itself. And then it ends on that horrendous, like a bad SNL sketch of Richard Nixon impersonator.
But like, here's the thing though, like after knowing they made this movie because of the parallels of the times, like they chose this subject matter.
Right.
But also of the times is now, you know, it's like then do a movie about women in journalism who we don't know about because they got fucked over by creepy bosses. Like, right. who are the women we don't know? In like, where's the journalism version of Hidden Figures? Make that movie.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
That's what we need. Ooh. We need the Hidden Figures version of
everything
in the world. Just do, it's Hidden Figures of, and call me later.
It's the new Hidden Figures extended universe.
Yes.
of yeah. forgotten women through history.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. There's yeah. like way too many cool people who did really cool shit. Like that I can't even.
Yeah. And we don't know about them because
yeah,
history has buried them.
The post has got to go.
Yeah.
It's got to go.
Don't
like it.
Good.
And it's going to be, it's nominated for everything to the point where I don't think that anyone who like nominated the post for an award has actually seen it.
No, I don't either because it's not winning.
No, no way.
Did it
no
win
way.
Anything?
No.
Good.
No. It's no. Also, you have to nominate Meryl Streep or... a ninja comes after you.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep's ninja army.
That's right.
You mean Meryl Street?
I'm sorry, you're right. Meryl yeah. Street.
Well, Liz, thank you so much for being
this
here.
This was so much fun. I'm so Yay. Glad that you invited me.
Yeah, oh this God. Was a blast.
I loved it.
Yay.
Can I come back?
Absolutely.
Or do you have those one guest rules? Like there's people who
no,
come
no,
back.
No.
Like, no, you can't come back
open door
until
policy.
For like 5 years.
Like, oh my God. Whenever you want.
Okay, good.
Open door policy.
Where can people find you online? Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Oh my gosh, yes. You can find me online at Liz Winstead on all platforms. I spell my name with two Z's because I'm an asshole. and then maybe what you want to do, because this is going to be super fun, on February 1st, Lady Parts Justice, which is my reproductive rights crazy comedy organization, is doing a big live stream telethon at ladypartsjustice.com. It's Rachel Bloom, Sarah Silverman, and I are hosting it.
Oh my God.
And it's a whole fun evening, 2-hour broadcast of comedy and learning about what's happening to reproductive rights and abortion access and how you can join in and have fun. You can pledge. Mark Hamill is going to be sitting for 2 hours making crafts that are going to be auctioned.
Crafts. Oh my God.
It's going to be so
Wait, does
fun.
Mark Hamill That's make crafts?
So... Yes. He doodles and he does crafts and he does a bunch of
oh
stuff.
Oh my God.
You have me at Mark Hamill doodles.
Yes. So go to ladypartsjustice.com oh for all God. The info. It's going to be a blast.
That's so yeah. cool.
There may or may not be a pinata that is the patriarchy with garbage inside.
Oh my God. That's so great.
Yeah. My blood pressure is rising.
Yeah.
Well, hey, on that, you can follow the Bechdel Cast on Twitter, yeah. Instagram, Facebook. You can go to our website, bechdelcast.com. Tweet at us. Rate and review us on iTunes. Pledge to our Patreon. Speaking of pledges.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming up on the Patreon in February, it's Oscar, what I call it?
You called it Biopic March.
Oh, okay. But it was actually February,
yes.
and it was actually not even biopics. It was Oscar Watch February. I accidentally called it Biopic March about 45 times. But this month on the Patreon, we're doing I, Tonya, and The Disaster Artist.
Which are biopics, so I understood your mistake. But
unfortunately, it was not for March. I don't know why I spent the whole day thinking it was. But subscribe to the Patreon. $5 a month gets you 2 extra episodes a month.
You betcha.
Pretty good.
And yay, journalism is alive and well, especially print journalism.
Swelling Hooray. John Williams
yeah,
score.
It's doing great.
All right, bye.
Bye. This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.